Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Do you ever see the water bubblers where you put your bottle underneath it says, this has saved X amount of bottles over the years?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets to the point where over a certain number, you just can't comprehend what it is anymore.
This is, no. Yes. 12 million chickens in a room is incomprehensible to me. It is. It's, I can't. Yeah. 12 million.
It's not 12.
Not 12,000 chickens.
1 million chickens.
12 million chickens.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I should probably just take this and go with this a little while longer. So yesterday, I went to play golf early in the morning. I was really cold.
It was
cold. Like in the high 30s when I got to the golf course at 7:45. It's high 30s. So I'm walking.
You said there was a frost warning?
Yes, frost delay.
Frost delay.
The legends don't play with a frost delay.
Yeah, so we had the 8 o'clock tee time, which made me very happy because I knew I could get in 16 or 17 holes by the time I had to call Matt Kelleher for PTI. But we didn't go till 8:20. So that's too bad. We were the first group, and we were fast. We were a full hole and a half out in front of everybody else. I stopped. I played 16 holes. And I'm happy about that. But anyway, so I'm walking from the parking lot to the bag area, and I'm walking with Arthur Mason. Arthur Mason plays early in the morning every single day. He's a very, very, very good player. I'm pretty sure he played hockey at Cornell, which is a real big deal.
Sure,
and
yes.
I like Arthur Mason very much. Like him very much. As we are walking, he and I, from the paddleball courts, I hear a voice screaming at me. And I look up. It's Michael Crilly. Michael is Jimmy's younger brother. Okay? And Michael Crilly is screaming, 12 million chickens. 12 million chickens. Like that. Okay? And I'm laughing because I go, yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? 12 million chickens. And Arthur is sort of lost in this, what has happened here. And I explain Molly and I explain the chickens. And Arthur takes out his phone and starts Googling something or other.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said to me, do you know how many chickens are killed every day in the United States of America for food? Can I take a shot at that?
I can't even think of it.
Every day.
Every day?
Every day this many chickens are killed, which is going to put the 12 million egg-laying chickens in a different perspective.
So it's a protected
for you.
Class.
You know.
Well, somebody in, there's like 34 billion chickens on the planet. So, I don't know, 100 million a day? I don't
500.
Know.
25 million chickens
a day.
Are killed.
We were off by a lot, Nige.
25 million chickens a day are killed for food for all of us.
Wow.
So, how
there's
many
still a debate
chickens
in the news
are
as to
there?
What is a boneless wing?
Somebody sent us in. Hold on.
How many chickens are there?
We got an enormous amount of emails.
About chickens?
Chickens.
Oh, I haven't seen them.
Oh, yeah. There's one in here that's, I can't remember what it says, but I recall the number being something enormously high, like 34 billion chickens on the planet. So
again, this does not in any way change my stupefaction at the notion that somebody owns 12 million chickens. It's an incomprehensible number to me because I'm thinking, well, where are they physically? Do you have a lot of plants? Do you have a lot of places all over the country? Or are you just weaver eggs? Are you just in Ohio? Are you just in one town in Ohio? Do you have 12 million chickens in one town? I tried to think of what, if you had $12 million bills, how much space in your house would that take up? I imagine that not your whole house. Single dollar bills.
I think that's more than your whole house.
You do?
This is one of those brain teasers. Like how many marbles will fill up a swimming pool?
How many?
I think it adds up pretty quickly. I mean, think about a stack of 100.
Yeah. Scott Phelan in Bozeman, Montana. There are 34.4 billion chickens currently alive in the world. Thrilling show you put on. Thanks. Do we believe that?
That's an animal revolution.
Do we believe that there are 34.4 billion chickens?
We'll have to fact
check. Do we believe that?
Seems like it could be. By the way, it's reminiscent of a joke someone said at one point when they ordered an omelet with chicken, and they said, that's not breakfast, that's a vendetta.
Okay. All right, I like that. I spent my night watching the Nats. The Nats beat the Mets last night. They beat them 5-0.
That's great.
Felt good to watch divisional baseball.
Finally.
You were upset about the crowd size.
I'm not upset about it. I'm surprised.
Do we know how many people were there?
One of the perennial favorites, and you look at what the East has done, and it looked pretty sparse from the start. They got vocal in like the fifth and sixth inning, but the Mets were out west for it seemed like a week and a half. I thought there'd be a big crowd. I think they're probably coming tonight to see Senga.
Really?
I don't know. I'm trying to feel like what, like why you wouldn't go see a team that you hope is going to go deep into the playoffs.
Yeah. Do you have a crowd? Do you have an attendance figure?
Let's see if you can get an attendance figure on
the Nats and the Mets last night. One of the reasons there's not a great crowd, I would think, is that the Nats stink.
20,507.
Well, that's not terrible.
It looked
for a Tuesday night, and it was cold, right? It was cold.
Yeah, it looked cold.
Yeah. Well, maybe they're counting their season tickets plus their walk-up or something like that. So the Nats beat the Mets 5-0.
Finally got some hits.
Josiah Gray's best outing of the season. He was 0-4. The top of their rotation, Patrick Corbin and Josiah Gray, I believe were 1-7 heading into last night's game. Josiah Gray had pitched well enough to lose in every single game. He'd lose by a small margin. He pitched well last night.
Yeah, get out of that fifth inning jam.
Yeah, he also had 6 strikeouts, I believe, by the third inning. The Mets are a pretty good hitting team. And he pitched well.
Yeah, like
and
the at sprint 5-0, after walks.
At 5-0, I wrote a note to Lowell Singer and to Norby saying that I'm done. And they just wrote good night. Now, they're Mets fans, and they were bemoaning the lack of hitting by the Mets. And I said, just remember, you lost to a starter who was 0-4 going in. But if you want to talk about the lack of hitting, and I understand the Nats got some hits last night. There's no one in their lineup who is threatening as a hitter. They don't have a single player from 1 to 9, not a single player who can take it out. They don't. They just don't. Dominic Smith plays every single game. Had an opportunity last night, I think in the 6th inning, with 2nd and 3rd and 2 out, and just popped out harmlessly to left field. He has 4. He's like a big hitter. He has 4 RBI. They played 22 games?
About that, yeah.
He's got 4 RBI and no home runs. He has no extra base hits. He has no extra base hits. And he's a 3-4-5 hitter.
Yeah, that's...
They don't have anybody. I know there was a home run, an off-the-wall double last night.
So that was Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
But before that, they had runners in scoring position.
Ruiz hit a home run last night.
But they had runners in scoring position in 5 out of the first 6 innings.
And
only had 2 runs to show for it. And if you looked at that 5th inning, they're one sort of bloop single away from having the game become,
out
of hand.
Exactly.
There's no one you have to pitch around. There's no one you're really worried about. They're going to change the game. You look at what is happening in the Red Sox-Orioles game, and there was wild swings and score at the end.
Grand slams on both sides.
So today, as a little PTI preview, let me drink some water here because I've...
Yeah, the tree pollen's down, but still there.
Yes.
As a little PTI preview, what did we do this? Maybe we did this yesterday. Maybe we did it yesterday. Happy anniversary, Trey Turner.
On
the occasion of Trey Turner's first cycle, which he got with the Nats when they beat the Colorado Rockies 15-12. And Trey Turner, for a scrawny little guy, much like Dansby Swanson, much like Francisco Lindor, these are shortstops with pop.
Yeah.
They can hit it out. They can hit 25 to 30
efficient
home runs.
Power.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know,
an efficient swing.
They can do this.
Yeah.
That's on a team where you have Bryce Harper, and you have Trey Turner.
Have you seen the Schwarber Wawa commercial for Schwarbops?
No.
Oh, fantastic.
No.
Oh.
You know, over the years, the
I think
Nats
about this every time
had
I
guys with pop. Zimmerman
when I fold
pop.
Laundry and I see the T-shirts that are, going through the cycle with the kids, the Turner, the Soto T-shirt.
Yeah,
gone. Soto's terrible now. It's a bad trade for him. He needs to get out. He's in 198.
Yeah,
he needs to get out of San Diego because something went wrong there for him. Okay, but the Nats had 8 to 10 guys over the last 8 to 10 years.
Yeah,
who could hit it out at any time. They don't have a hitter. How do you get in the major leagues without a hitter? They don't have a single hitter where you're fearful of him. Am I wrong? I don't think I'm
wrong.
No,
you're not. And then you also look at the aging Worth or Zimmerman where you understood like they could still give you that timely hit.
Dangerous.
And you look at the types of guys who are coming up. You have you know, medium to smaller size outfielders and infielders who don't have that presence. It's you're remembering when they didn't have that big first baseman for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, Trey Turner was a shortstop who could hit it out. CJ Abrams cannot hit it out.
Yeah.
He can't hit it out. I mean,
did they have anyone? There's always somebody in the minors. You know, this kid's a big thumper. Did they?
I don't know.
Anybody like that?
Yeah, I don't know.
They'd have brought that somebody up to replace Dominic Smith. Like Joey Meneses, he can hit a lot of doubles. He's not a home run guy.
No.
They don't have anybody.
And if you're going to have a team like that, then you need just lights out pitching, you know?
One other thing.
Patrick Corbin Day.
Yeah. Patrick, that's right. Bet on the over, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
One other thing I would like to mention. Over the last 2 weeks to 2.5 weeks on the PTI show, whenever I've taken the position that I've been consistent with, that the Phoenix Suns, with the addition of Kevin Durant, are the best team in basketball, I've been met by screaming skepticism from Michael Wilbon and Kendrick Perkins, basically saying I'm an imbecile. Kendrick Perkins flat out declared that the Clippers would beat the Phoenix Suns. How's that working out? Because Phoenix won the series last night 4-1. Now you can say to me, oh, well, the best two players on the Clippers didn't play three games. Kawhi Leonard didn't play three, and Paul George didn't play any. Paul George is a dog, okay? He gave himself the nickname Playoff P. He's a dog. He's one of the worst clutch players ever who's gotten run for being a great player. So I don't want to even hear about him. Kawhi Leonard's a great player, but he doesn't get out there. He doesn't get out. Steven Strasburg's a great pitcher. He doesn't pitch. You're paying Kawhi Leonard a lot of money. He's hurt. He doesn't play. Who won the series? Phoenix won the series. Wilbon talked about how he voted De'Aaron Fox first-team All-NBA ahead of Devin Booker. Devin Booker had 47 last night, didn't he? Devin Booker's averaged about 40 in this series. You can talk about De'Aaron Fox all you want. He's sitting, I think, on a in a 2-2 situation, I think. And Devin Booker's sitting in a 4-1 situation waiting for the next round. Just wanted to mention that. We'll take a break when we come back. Booger McFarlane, what?
I have at least an early fact check on how many chickens are in the planet.
How many?
This just says over 33 billion.
Well, that's the whole planet, though. Like, a lot of them could be in places that we don't know about. Like, I don't, you know.
Like unknown species of chicken?
The Azores?
Uruguay could have 9 billion. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. They say it's difficult because the population numbers
changes every day. Every day. When they kill 25 million a day.
Exactly. It's hard to keep tabs.
Booger McFarlane, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Eric Galley, who writes, my friend Luquesa Morin was born and bred in Metro DC, but she's moved on to warmer pastures in San Diego. She has a beautiful singing voice and she has composed and sung many songs. Perhaps you can play the attached song during the show one day. She owns all the rights. It's a show, what's it called?
The song is called All About That.
All About That. Because it doesn't have that here.
Oh.
Sorry.
All About That. Luquesa, I hope I pronounced that correctly, Morin. Michael, if people like Luquesa Morin want to have their music played on this show and played without us yapping over it at the end of the show, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Just a lovely voice.
Yes, she does.
She's a lovely voice. She plays in Booger McFarlane on the occasion of the draft, which begins tomorrow night. which is now a 3-day deal. Used to be a 1-day deal. Used to, in the real old days, never be on TV. There was no central headquarters. People just called you and said, hey, I'm with the Baltimore Colts. We just took you in the third round. And you say, well, do you have the right number? Stuff like that. But you played football. And you talk about football. Wilbon thinks the draft is the most overhyped. Well, he thinks everything about the NFL is overhyped, even though then he claims to watch it. But he thinks the draft is ridiculous and always screams, you're on the clock. Do you, as a former football player, do you like the draft? Do you find it exciting?
Yeah, the draft is exciting, and I'll tell you why. And you have to understand this. There's going to be 250 or so players drafted. And those players, Tony, it's the biggest night of their life. And for somebody that's gotten that call before, it's something that culminates a lot of hard work, a lot of memories. It changes lives, man. So, yeah, it may be or it may seem to be a big hoopla on the outside and maybe a little bit too much and overboard. But I think the appetite for the NFL, the sensation that our country has for storylines and emotion, I think all that ties together, and you see how teams are built and you see young men's lives change right before your eyes. And I think that's why the draft is always intriguing to people, because it's kind of a little bit of insight into the NFL, kind of how the groceries are shot for and what teams are looking for and how teams are going to be built. And then when the draft is over, the NFL kind of goes on a little hiatus for a little while. And yeah. Then it picks back up in July, and on we go to training camp.
So because most people don't have a lot of depth about college football overall, except maybe the team that they root for or the conference that they're in, it is very easy to concentrate on quarterbacks being at the top of the draft. And I'm not going to suggest, I'd be a fool to suggest that a quarterback is an overrated position. Because if you have a great quarterback, you're in it every, if you have Patrick Mahomes, you're in it every single year. But I'm wondering if, as a football player, you feel there is a position that is overrated in terms of the draft and a position that may be underrated in terms of the draft.
Well, the underrated is always going to be the non-sexy positions of linemen. Mm-hmm. Any offensive lineman or defensive lineman, particularly offensive, because it's hard to keep a stat for them. So it's hard to quantify what they do. So when your team selects an offensive tackle, everybody can't go, "Ooh, man, great. What does he do?" Like no one really knows, except the people that are hardcore football players, that's how your team is built. You know, football teams are always built front to back, inside out.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way you build your team. And so offensive linemen, very, very underrated, very non-sexy. As far as overrated, Tony, I think wide receivers are probably overrated. It's not going to be quarterbacks, because those guys touch the ball every play.
Yep.
And when you touch it every play, you got to be able to control it. And if you don't have one, you're really looking for one, and you're not gonna win without one. But wide receivers, like, I remember growing up, Tony, everybody on my street could catch a ball and run. And some were bigger than others, sure. But even now, like, you can find wide receivers really anywhere. Now, they may not be DeAndre Hopkins in his prime or Stephon Diggs, but you can find guys that can catch the ball and run. And so I think you're going to see that play out tomorrow night. I don't think you're going to see a ton of wide receivers drafted high, because there's so many that the depth in this draft is really good.
Would you, if you ran a team, if you were a GM, would you rather draft a player or sign a free agent?
I'd rather draft a player.
You would? I go the other way. Go ahead, tell me why.
Well, because here's the deal. When you draft a player, from the economic standpoint, it's in your favor, because the deal's already slotted. And so from a bookkeeping standpoint, you know exactly what you're dealing with, and you have very limited financial obligations for the first 3 or 4 years. Even if you draft a guy number one overall, the financial obligations are very limited, and your risk is not as high. When you go out and get a free agent like Odell Beckham and you pay him, even though the Ravens gave him 1 year and $18 million, that's a lot of coin for one player to not know what you're going to get. If he gets hurt, if he doesn't have a good season, and now you have $18 million tied up in a player that you may not get a return out of. And plus, it's kind of fun. Like, I don't know about you, Tony, but every now and then I like going to the grocery store. And I throw a hat on, I go to the grocery store, and I'll go up and down the aisles and kind of see what they got out there a little bit, you know. I'm not a big shopper, but every now and then I enjoy shopping. And I equate drafting players to shopping, except you've done a lot of research, you've done a lot of homework, and it's a finite amount of time that you get to pick the groceries, which is really, really cool.
I love going to the grocery store. I absolutely love it. And I go down every single aisle, even the aisles where I know I'm not going to buy anything. I love going to the grocery store. I'm not good at other things. The hardware store is confusing to me, but the grocery store is great. All right, let me get to personal stuff. You were a great player at LSU. Where were you physically? Now they bring a lot of people in to New York or some other place, wherever they hold the draft. Sometimes it's embarrassing. Brady Quinn, I remember, didn't get picked and it was looking for a place to hide. Where were you when you were drafted?
I was in Winsboro, Louisiana. This is when the draft started on Saturday. It started at noon on Saturday. And literally, which was 11 a.m. Central Time, I was at my mom's house, and we were just having a big cookout and a big party. And we invited everybody who we knew came by, stopped by. And my mom was kind of sitting in the back in her room, just relaxing, just laying low. And it was a long wait. And this is back when there were 15 minutes between each pick. And so the draft started at 11 Central. I didn't get picked until about 2:20, 2:30 Central. So it was a long wait. And, you know, the picks went by very slow. And I just watched on TV, man. That's it. Like, there was no big hoopla. There was no via satellite. There was no camera at the house. I had a prepaid cell phone. My agent had a cell phone. My mother's phone at the house rang. But other than that, it was just kind of a laid-back atmosphere because I didn't want to go to New York, because going to New York would have meant that I would have had a limited number of people in my circle that would have been able to come. And there were far too many people that I wanted to thank and show appreciation for that day that I didn't want to leave them out. So we just kind of hung out in the yard and had a nice little country party and barbecued all day, Tony.
Where did you want to go? Was there a team where you said, that's the one I want?
I didn't have a want, but because I played in the Senior Bowl and Tampa Bay coached the Senior Bowl, I developed a relationship with those guys. And so I knew when I left the Senior Bowl in Mobile in late January, and I knew the Bucs were picking 15, I knew I wasn't going past Tampa at 15.
Okay.
Now, the key was anybody else going to pick me before that? I wanted to be picked as high as possible, Tony, because that meant that meant more money, man. Like, I didn't really have a preference as far as team. Now, obviously, I didn't want to go play in a cold weather city, and I probably didn't need to go to Miami or Atlanta just because those two cities had a lot to do. And for a country boy who was very limited in some of the things that I've done in my life, putting me in Miami or me in Atlanta with a lot of money might not have been good. you and I might not have been having this conversation now. But other than that, I really didn't have a preference because it's a lifelong dream that I worked for, and my mother had helped and sacrificed me to get to that point. So, I just kind of sit back and waited. And I'll never forget when the phone rang, Tony. And to me, the moment that made it worthwhile for me, the moment that really said, you know what, like, this is really impactful, not just to me, was it's the first time I ever saw my mother cry as I'm on the phone. And because they called my agent, and he passed me the phone, and she looks at me, so she can tell this is the call, because I'm like, yes, sir, and can't wait. And she starts crying. It's the first time I ever saw her cry. And, like, for a kid, I mean, I'm 21 at the time. Like, that really meant something because she was happy, and she knew that I was happy. And when as I became older and you became a parent, and it's one thing when you're happy, but, man, it's something totally different when your kids become happy and you're happy for them. Man, that changed my life, and I still smile about it years later because now I got kids. I got a teenager. And one that's a preteen. And so, like, I kind of live for them and just to make them happy and raise them the right way. But I always think about that moment of her being excited and happy.
That's nice. That's lovely. So, and it was Tampa Bay. Prior to that, was there any team, as you watch in the draft, that drafts somebody and you say, they should have got me? I mean, that team should have got me.
No question. Tony, listen, I was picked 15. There were five quarterbacks taken before me. There were two running backs taken before me. There was an offensive tackle. Like, I used to sit there. It was Tim Couch, Achilles Smith, Donovan McNabb, Ricky Williams, Adrian James, Tim Bailey, David Boston, John Tate. I used to know them all by heart.
Yeah.
And this is 24 years ago. I mean, it was all those guys. And I'm who else? Dante Culpepper. And all these guys, Tony, and I'm like, man, I'm a better player than him. I went to LSU. He went to Ohio State. Like, I said that about everybody, especially the quarterback. Because I'm like, Tim Couch? Man, I used to slam Tim Couch on Saturday nights. You do that every play. But at the same time, you try to be happy for your fellow competitors, but you also realize that there's a little bit of selfishness inside because everybody wants to be picked as high as they can.
So a long time ago, I was covering an All-Star game. Might have been Magic Johnson's second or third year in the league. And I had an idea to write a column by going to the All-Stars and saying, if you weren't this, if you weren't an NBA player, what do you think you would have done with your life? And then occasionally Isaiah Thomas said, I'd have been president. And I said, you're not 35 years old. There's a constitutional limit. You wouldn't be president now. And he goes, I'd be something else. But occasionally you get somebody, and Julius Erving and Magic Johnson were the two that I remember. Julius Erving was a little bit older then, in his mid to late 30s. And he said, yeah, I'd be working at Grumman on Long Island, putting airplanes together. And Magic Johnson, who was just always a little bit wise before his years, said, I'd be on the line, GM. That's where I'm from. That's what I'd be doing. I'd be on the line. If you weren't this thing that you are, if there were no sports, do you have any idea what you would have been?
You know, that's a good question, Tony. I enjoy people. I majored in business management at LSU. I wanted to be involved with business and people. And so a specific job I couldn't tell you, but I definitely, that intrigued me. It kind of gave me a reason to go to all those classes I did, not just to stay eligible, not just to do that, but it's just like business intrigued me. Numbers always intrigued me. So I would have probably been in some form of business,
mm-hmm.
whether it be ownership or whether it be working my way up to be a high-level executive. I enjoy managing and being around people and communicating with people just because I'm a people person. And so I think it would have been some form of business and people, business and relationship situation.
That's nice to know. I'll get you out of here on this. What in God's name is Deion Sanders doing at Colorado? What is he doing? What is he doing? 31 players are leaving. He hates them all. Go ahead.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Tony, is that, you know, nowadays there's it's easy to turn your roster over. And I think for the first time, Coach Prime had players that he looked at. And I think, honestly, he's asking himself, can I win? Can I compete with these players? And probably a lot of them, he said no.
He did. He said no.
And I'm assuming that some of those players left because, A, they didn't get any playing time and they saw the writing on the wall. And then the others, he probably asked to leave because he needs better players. Now, is it the right way to do things? I don't know, just because kids go to college and the old model, you're supposed to nurture the players, the coach, and all that good stuff. Well, it's not happening like that anymore. Like, this has really turned into a business.
Business.
Where these kids are looking for NIL and coaches can go out and kind of basically buy their team. I just know that the amount of excitement that he has around that program,
wow.
You could see it on Saturday during the spring game. Now, it's just a spring game, and there's a lot of turnover that's got to happen. I just hope that he can get the right players because they have a chance to kind of start fast. I mean, they could be, 2-1. And then it's going to be murderer's row. It's USC. It's Utah. It's Oregon. And I don't think anybody in their right mind is looking at Colorado to be able to win those games. But for a team that was 1-11 last year, if he can get to, I don't know, 4 wins, you have to say it's a success.
Yes.
But I think Deion is just really being honest with himself and trying to turn their roster over, and it seems wrong because when 31 kids leave, you know, it almost seems like he's putting them out, and maybe that's what he's doing. But this is where college football is now.
He's the guy you want to watch all year long. All right, will we see you later on PTI? Are you going to be on the PTI show later?
Yes, I'll see you later.
Wonderful. I'll see you through the magic of television. Thank you, Booger.
Anytime. Y'all have a great day.
Booger McFarland, boys and girls, we'll take a break. We'll come back with Bob Ryan. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
I'm an AI bot and I'm not on strike. You can hire me to write what you like. I can write kind of funny, I can write pretty dry, I write happy time items for PTI. I can make you laugh, I can make you sob, I can write you right out of your freaking job. I come up with a good half-baked idea, I can write just like Greg Garcia. I'm flexible, I'm available, I'll never go on strike. I can be like Mike, I can write like the Beatles, I can write like the boss, got the Genesee quad, got the special sauce. I can write like Nigel, I can, I will, just pop on in and you'll be through. I can write like Chaucer, I can write like the Bard, like Pablo Torre or Levitard. I can write like Wilbon, I'm not surprised. I can write like a goy or circumcised. I can write just like Louise Brooke, I'm the best. I don't need a chair and I don't need a desk. I can write with swagger, I can write with moxie, I can write like Chuck, I can write like Roxy. So when the writers strike, let me take their spot. I'm your dream employee, I'm an AI bot. I can write like Lupica, sure I can. Don't need benefits or a pension plan. So when the writers strike, bring me in, and then you're never gonna want those writers back again. I'm an AI bot. I'm an AI bot. I'm an AI bot. I'm an AI bot.
Dan Byrne is brilliant. He said he couldn't resist doing this. No, he's irresistible himself and totally brilliant.
He really is.
Did he have a line in there, I'm a goy or I'm circumcised, yep, or something like that? Pretty pretty wild. All right, plays in Bob Ryan, the quintessential American sports writer. And when I sat down yesterday to write questions for you, the first thing I wrote down is two Boston teams poised to move on. Except last night, you know, Trae Young sank a three with about 7 seconds ago or whatever it was. And in Boston, Atlanta extended the series to 3-2. Now, I don't think they're going to win, Atlanta, but what were your thoughts watching that and the mood in Boston?
First of all, I give it an 85, and it's easy to dance to.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So that's number one. Yes, I was there, and when they were leading by 13 with 6-something to go, and particularly when they were down to about the four-minute mark, I said, okay, guys, it's just about stops now. Just stop them. You don't need any more points. This is about defense. And, of course, it never materialized. And Young had his way. And it wasn't just Young. Too many wide-open guys. Bay hurt them. Collins hurt them. Bogdanovich hurt them. But, of course, with accounting for 64 total points, Trae Young hurt them the most. Two things, Tony. When they were up 2-0 and there were routes, it was just – everybody was assuming it was going to be a sweep and all that. And the two reasons I did not. One is that, like you, Turney, I'm so often burdened by knowledge.
Yeah.
And history. And I've seen too many 2-0s turn into 2-2. And this, to me, had no reason why it couldn't. And the second reason being, I don't trust this team. They have not earned my trust, and they should not have earned the trust of any fan that they are going to live up to their potential. They are the most talented team, top to bottom, in the NBA. But they're not the best team yet until they manifest that talent, and then they do it. Last night was an Exhibit A. They failed the test. It wasn't the final exam, but it was an exam, and they failed it. And now they're in a situation where they have to go. They got to win another game, and I think they will. In fact, I do think they're going to win on Friday in Atlanta. But if they don't, they got a seventh game at home, and they should win. But they got. People nervous around here because, last year they were appeared to be in control of that series in the finals, and then the adults took over and showed them they still had something to learn. But, Tony, it is not about talent. They do not need any infusion of talent.
Right.
They have all the talent necessary. They touch all the bases technically. But they just have to go do it when it matters, and that's another matter. Okay, so people here are a little anxious, and it was disappointing, but I still think they're going to prevail. Now, now there's much more faith in the Bruins, who are winning without Bergeron and Krejci anyway, and now getting Bergeron back tonight, and I would be very surprised if they don't finish it off tonight.
I will get to the Bruins in a second. There is a follow-up question I have on the Celtics, and in watching what Miami has done with Milwaukee and, just saying if Miami mm-hmm. were to win that series, mm-hmm. who gets the most benefit? Well, to me, the most benefit goes to Boston and Philadelphia because the winner of that series is going to have a reasonably clear path into the finals. Do you agree with that?
Well,
if there's a team that you really can't trust, I would say it's Philadelphia.
Well, Philadelphia, it's so iffy now because of Embiid's situation, but also they're not particularly deep, I don't think.
Right.
I like their starting five, and I certainly I'm a charter member of the Maxi fan club. I signed up back in Lexington, believe me. So I'm a big believer in Maxi, and of course, Embiid, you can't exaggerate how good Embiid is when he's on his game. He is extraordinary and unstoppable, and he bothers the Celtics a great deal. They will not look forward to a series with Embiid. Last time they saw him, he only had 52.
Ooh.
And so, and that's going to be fresh in everyone's mind. About Miami, all year long I said, don't sleep on Miami. I respect Spoelstra enormously, and Jimmy Butler, as we've seen, when he wants to play, I shouldn't put it that way, when he gets juiced up to play at his high playoff level, we all saw what that can mean the other night. And they don't have Hero, but they have a guy that was sitting on the bench doing nothing for 3 months and had lost his job, and that was Duncan Robinson. But now they can plug him back in, and they're not going to lose that much if he plays the way he's capable of playing. People are saying, well, good, it'll be great if Milwaukee loses to Miami. Well, I've been through that one, too, in the past. When the team that you think is going to win doesn't win, and you think, well, that other team, they're inferior. Well, they beat the other team, damn it. Miami will come in with feeling very, very good about themselves if they finish off this series.
I agree.
It's all part of the fun of the playoffs. There's so many dynamics.
Let me get to the hockey, then, because I think that even people like me, who really don't know much about hockey, we look back at this season that the Boston Bruins have had, and you say to yourself, you know what? They should win. It would be nice if they won. It would be nice if they, unlike the Seattle Mariners, if they capped off a record season by actually winning the Stanley Cup. And the odds are against that, as we've seen in the last 20 years. If you finish mm-hmm. first, more often than not, way more often than not, you don't win. So this brings me to this question, because it's over now in terms of game two. But game two, when the Bruins lost at home 6-3, there had to be shockwaves reverberating throughout Boston.
Well, the nature of it, because it was 2-2 after two periods, and they have this year been the team that would stomp you in the third period, and it happened to them.
Yeah.
And that was the shocking aspect, that they got blown away at home in the third period. That has not happened all year, literally, not once. Now, their response was terrific, and I think that tells us something. But once again, I'm going to hearken to the history thing. When you've been around too long, it's a burden. 1971 Bruins were an enormously successful team, with 3 100-point scorers. Three! And Ken Hodge being the third. And if I have to name the first two, then you don't know anything about hockey.
I would have said Esposito and Orr. That would have been my guess.
Well, you would. You're correct. The third was Ken Hodge.
Okay.
They were beaten by Montreal with a rookie goaltender who had played six games prior to the playoffs, some guy named Dryden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that memory for many of us lingers, and we've seen it can happen. So that's what I was cautious going into about my expectations going into the playoffs. But in truth, they didn't win these games all season. They didn't set these records. They didn't get these points. They didn't get these total victories. They didn't finish first in all kinds of categories by accident. They were terrific. They're deep. And also, you've got to give Don Sweeney enormous credit for picking up three useful players at the trading deadline that are integral to what they're doing now. Orlov, the defenseman, Hathaway, who's a bruising wing, and Bertuzzi. Who brings you an edge, and they've got the Vezina goaltender for sure. Winner is Ullmark, and a great excellent backup. There's nothing they don't have,
right?
You know, and they're showing it now without Bergeron and Krejci, and they're still winning. So it'll be a really, to me, a bigger disappointment, certainly, if the Bruins don't win than if the Celtics don't win.
I agree, but I mean, I would cast it in a different way in terms of disappointment. Disappointment only that they were and are that good. And they, you know, they deserve to win. This is a dangerous area for a former sports writer. But in my mind, they deserve to win because of what they've done.
Oh, no. It's like last night's game. As that game was unfolding, as the Hawks, when they finally caught up and everything, I said, they deserve to win. Celtics, I'm sorry.
No.
The Hawks deserve to win. And they made the big plays, and the Celtics made the, I won't say bonehead, but Marcus Smart, you know, you have to take a whole package with certain people. He's so reckless at times as opposed to being aggressive. That's one thing. That's a positive. Recklessness is a negative. And he committed a useless foul going for a loose ball that he didn't need. And I thought it was a bad call, but he did not get the benefit of the doubt. That didn't help him. And how about, by the way, Jason Tatum getting a technical foul in the last minute and a half of a game?
Can't do that. You can't
bitching about
it.
A call in which he wasn't involved.
Can't do it. No.
And right then and there, Tone, I said, okay, you deserve to lose. Bleep you. And I did say, I used the other word.
Okay, I figured you might. Can I go back to hockey just for 1 second?
Yes, sure.
Hockey has different rules than other sports. Hockey does not disclose the nature of why you don't play. Bergeron, I don't know why he didn't play. Does anyone know?
It's an upper body injury, Tone. That's all our need to know in the hockey world. It's either upper body or lower body. And maybe someone could be concussed. That would be the third. Other than that, that's all they think we need to know. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah. I mean, do you like non-disclosure like that? I assume they do it so the other team doesn't pick on that body part.
I think a lot of that, in general terms, in all sports, I think it's nonsense. But it's part of their codes.
Okay.
Hey, we have you may have heard about this. We have a certain football coach who's not big on divulging information.
I know.
We've learned to live with that.
All right, here's something I wanted to ask you. Ime Udoka, who in his 1 year as a head coach in the NBA went to the NBA Finals. So the notion that he's not good does not stand.
No.
It does not stand. Boston got rid of him for conduct unbecoming with a female subordinate. Everybody knows that at this point. Just hired in Houston. Your thoughts on them hiring him?
Well, we'll see. Interesting to see what the reaction is among any females that are involved in the situation, be they employees of the team, be they significant others or wives or partners of administrators or of players. I don't know. I mean, how he's going to be. The Celtics, by the way, who the players loved him and have been pretty universal in their support of him and are applauding this hire, and as I read in the paper this morning. I don't know. What does he have to do? Does he have to go and go into sackcloth and ashes? Does he got to make a public confession? Does he have to take out an ad in the Houston Chronicle now and say, I regret what I did, but I promise you I won't be, messing around with any females anymore? I don't know what he has to do. But you're right about his reputation as a coach. It was enhanced last year, naturally, and they're hiring a good coach. But we'll see if there's any backlash. I don't know if there will be.
Well, I bring this up because it's Houston. And I know it's a different team, and I know it's a different sport, but if there's anybody that treated women terribly and scandalously, it was Deshaun Watson. And that may, just to me is, wow, there's going to be an echo because of that.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't connected that dot, but that's very good. And of course, then there's a matter of chicanery, you know, with the Astros and all that. But much more direct is the Watson reference. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, yeah. I don't know how it's going to be. It's an open question. Well, I can't predict. I don't know. You know how forgiving people are going to be, and once again, I don't know what he can do to try to win people over if he needs to do that. Or, you know, I don't know. I mean, other than what I said, maybe you ought to take out an ad in the paper. I don't know.
We'll see. Thank you, Bobby. As always,
Tom.
Bob
care,
Ryan,
bye-bye.
The quintessential American sports writer. I have to say that I don't know how you felt about this, but when he said I was at the game, I just thought I got a little smile on my face. You know, you were at the game. I should be at games. I don't anymore. I'm at the TV. We'll take a break. When we come back, email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag, got your email, faxes, and notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag, gonna read some for all you folks. Hey, Tony! Come on, come on! Hey, Tony! Read that mail now, baby.
Love Hot Pink Hangover. Love them. That's just about it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me say, woman, get your head out of curlers. Time to get your butt out of bed. Get down your hats and your baggage, my child. Going back home, getting back to the homestead. That's a song called Gasoline Alley Bread by the Hollies. That's a great song. That is a song about demography being destiny, that we tried as much as we can, but this is our ceiling. We just can't go above the ceiling. Now, a lot of people do get above the ceiling, but it's a lovely song. The Hollies, much like the Zombies, are a very underrated group.
Yes.
The Kinks, not an underrated group, not an overrated group. The Kinks, justly rated for being smart and good. The Hollies, really good. People look at a variety of early songs like Bus Stop and Stop, 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 and they think, oh, pop group. I don't know. Gasoline Alley Bread.
Which was 1970, came out a little bit later.
Sometimes All I Need Is the Air That I Breathe. You know, they really.
Long Cool Woman.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah.
Really good. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for
Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
Thanks to our guests today, Bob Ryan and Booger McFarland. Thanks as well to today's sponsors, Priceline, ZipRecruiter. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, leave us a review. From Alex Turchi, I'm going to have this. I've had this cold all day now. Do you think it's COVID? Do you think I have COVID?
Well, I did go to a wedding.
You did golf in 40-degree weather, so it could be just a bit of a chill.
I took the shot and my arm is better.
It's better now, right?
Not great.
Do you feel, are your symptoms better after that rain washed all the pollen off or no?
I'm just choking. You know, this is not a good thing. I'm trying to drink enough water to not choke, and I'm choking.
Well, we're trying to give you space to take that necessary sip.
Yes. From Alex Turchi in Carrboro, North Carolina. Tony made a reference to the March solstice recently. I thought I might help with his general confusion. It's an equinox or an equinox in March and September, and a solstice in June and December. Solstices are the longest and shortest days of the year, while equinoxes or equinoxes occur when the day and night are equally as long. Come on, man. We've been over this before. What are we doing here? From Tyler Etchenkamp, a lovely emailer from Lincoln, Nebraska. Ask Michael if he remembered to pack a crust of bread for each of the boys for the Nats game.
Got a snack.
From Ron Wade. Hearing Michael talk about the first game certificate he got for the captain reminded me to tell your listeners about another first game option.
And a pen.
The parents who want to give their kids something more than half an orange soda at the game. Most teams sell the dugout lineup card for each game, and some will allow you to reserve and pay for them ahead of time. Because there are only two cards, one in each dugout, it's not only a memory for your child, it's a valuable piece of memorabilia you can sell if your child wants to attend a Saliza-type school. I bought the lineup card from the day my daughter was born, and 12 years later, it's framed on her bedroom wall, and even though she'd never sit and watch a baseball game, she still proudly displays it. I didn't know that.
That is so cool.
I had no idea.
We should call the Nats.
Yes.
I'll do that for a wedding, too.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
From Seth Shaner.
8-2-14 beat the Phillies.
Chuck and Roxy, 207, New Albany, Ohio. Your conversation with Greg Garcia about the pending writer strike and the possibility of studios using AI in lieu of writers made me think Greg needs to lean into this idea and make a show about AI in the writer's room. Greg can play himself or hire someone to do so. I'm thinking Matthew Reese, so Kerry Russell sightings could be regular occurrences. And he's pitching a show idea to a studio, only to have the studio force him to use AI. But here's a twist. The studio has hired Intel to build a robot-looking computer that is to serve as Greg's AI writer, and Greg risks losing the show if he harms the robot, which he is constantly tempted to do. We get to find out if Greg's mind has finally met its match as it battles AI on a daily basis. Maybe Nigel could voice the robot. From Adam Pankratz. My name is Adam Pankratz, writing from British Columbia, Canada, home of soda bears. I was delighted the Pilfering Bear made your show. I know Canada makes it on your show from time to time, though the last mention I could clearly think of was when several curlers got so drunk at a televised Bonspiel, I don't know what that means, B-O-N-S-B-I-E-L, they couldn't play and got thrown out of the tournament. I'd like to assure our American friends that Canada is a country of more than drunk curlers and thieving bears. We also eat moose meat covered in maple syrup between periods of our pickup hockey leagues on our perpetually frozen streets. Thanks for the laughs. From Ryan Sailing in Plymouth, Michigan. 69 cans of soda out of a vehicle. That bear's got nothing on Wade Boggs on a cross-country flight. From Elliot Olshansky. My cousin Mara Cohn Ioannidis is a professor at Missouri State University and the president of the Midwest Jewish Studies Association. Through her, I recently learned that the 35th annual conference of the Midwest Jewish Studies Association will be held this October at York College in Toronto. I thought Wilbon would want to know. Best regards from Suffolk County, where I recently purchased two bags of Toronto Raptors branded Ruffles chips, mozzarella marinara, and poutine from the new full-service exotic snack boutique in the Smith Haven Mall. Picture attached. For News Channel 8 of the Ruffles.
Poutine chips.
From Ken Scudder in Tacoma Park, Maryland. As the father of four-year-old twins, my weeks are spent worrying about what the hell to do with them on weekends. When I heard about the Day of the Book Fair in Kensington, Maryland, I was intrigued. When I saw the first act on the children's stage was The Great Zucchini, I told the woman related to me by marriage, we're going. The Great Zucchini was as great as Michael and the other littles have said. He had about 40 toddlers squealing and cheering like Liz Clark during Thunder Road Encore. I did give him a hearty La Cheeserie after he was done, but considering how many kids were around, I forewent the TK salute.
Yes, I'm the great zucchini.
From Chip Robinson in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. When I was growing up in Kentucky, my grandparents owned a farm in Bourbon County. They raised tobacco and beef cattle. These days, the cattle they raised would be called grass-fed, free-range, small farm beef. Back then, we called them cattle. One year, my grandparents gave each of their five sons and each of us grandkids a cow for Christmas.
That's a lot of meat to
the
store.
The deal was that we could decide when to sell the cows, and any calves our cow produced would also be ours. Being a broke 15-year-old, I eagerly awaited next year's sale so I could cash in my walking savings account and buy a car. That's exactly what I did the following fall when I bought my first car from our local auction house for $600. A 1984 Plymouth Sapporo with a bent frame, no radio, no air conditioning. Within a matter of weeks, no catalytic converter. I should have kept the cow. Yes, the cow is Uncle Benny's table.
Yes.
You should have kept the cow.
You look like an online kind of guy.
From Mike Todd, not that Mike Todd, in Columbus, Ohio. Normally when I receive telemarketing calls, I simply ignore them. However, when my caller ID indicated that I was receiving a call from Cigna, I could not pass up the opportunity.
Of course not.
I answered the call and the telemarketer began, "Hi, my name is Bob from Cigna." I stopped Bob mid-sentence and asked, Are you aware that Cigna is an acronym? Calculated indifference gives no aid. I then told him to pass along the notion of spending a little more time approving claims, and then told him to go do something with himself, which I won't repeat here. Fight the power, baby.
Well done.
From Reggie Oates in Louisville, Kentucky. After hearing you mention the Reggie bar on last week's show, I immediately looked up the candy store and ordered a box of that. As my name is also Reggie, my son Ross, who's an avid listener, saw the title of the show that day was Reggie. He immediately called me and said, "Are you on the show with Tony?" Eileen was such a delight to work with, and she said the orders are pouring in, which shows the power of the littles. I retired 4 years ago, and listening to your show is one of my highlights of the day. Please don't retire anytime soon. Thank you for the years of enjoyment. You may remember me from sending you the U.S. Open golf flag when Tiger won the U.S. Open. And also a custom pillow with Maggie's picture on it, the cash-eating dog.
Just right
I look Both to my
here.
Left.
Yeah.
I look to my left, and I see that right now. Please give my best to the entire crew and the TK salute to all. Reggie Oates in Louisville, Kentucky. Should we get out now? You're looking at the phone.
Yeah, sure.
Can we do one more?
Do one more. Sure.
One more is good. From Brian in Goodyear, Arizona, who was the official dog fosterer of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Had to write to let you know about an experience I just had that encompasses multiple recurring themes of your show. Golf, travel woes, who you sat next to on a plane, or in this case, who you sat next to in the boarding area. While waiting to board a delayed flight from Houston back home to Phoenix, an older woman sat next to me and we started chatting. The conversation eventually turned to golf. She asked how my game was and I replied, "I'm about a 20. In reality, I'm a 23, but I figured I'd use Chuck and Roxy math on this one. I asked her about her game and she sheepishly said, "I'm better than a 20. A few more questions and a formal introduction later, it turns out I'm sitting next to former LPGA Player of the Year, two-time major winner, and the most recent inductee in the World Golf Hall of Fame, Sandra Palmer. She had been in Houston attending the Chevron Championship as a past winner. Multiple delays eventually led to a canceled flight, shared cab rides to and from a non-two-bathroom hotel that American Airlines put us up in, and a few hours of conversation. Sandra made what could have been a miserable travel experience into a true delight. After sticking with her through this entire experience, she offered me a couple of free golf lessons the next time I'm in her neck of the woods. I'm hoping to take her up on that offer in a couple of weeks. Hopefully, I too can one day say I'm better than a 20. It's lovely. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Hey, Dad.
Dad, honey.
Tony.
Dad.
Dad,
Tony.
Dad,
Tony.
Dad, honey.
Tony.
Dad, honey. Tony.
Listen up. It died.
They say life's a journey you gotta take. Take every chance, every break. Look back with just no regrets. Oh, baby, my story ain't over yet. Gotta go right now, gotta make some moves. Gotta figure out what is the truth. Still trying to find my purpose. Is this journey even worth it? I got some good news for y'all. As long as you keep running tall, gotta keep a smile on your face and a good attitude. Cause them haters gonna hate, there ain't nothing you can do. And I'm fit right now cause I'm going through everything that I needed to do. Everyone that's coming now, got to filter out. Cause I'm all about the life and I'm all about the lifestyle. If you chill with my vibe, come and get with me now. I tell all my homies, tell them to call me. Yeah, I'm just chill like that, come over and vibe with me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. To happen that I had planned years ago. I'm standing tall, ready for it all. They think that they know me, they wanna really show me. I know what I'm about, I know what I got now. down. You can't bring me down. No, no, you can't bring me down. I'm vibing right now. If you only knew me, you would see that I'm chilling. I'm just trying to do me. Oh, yeah.
You can hire me to write what you like. I can write kind of funny. I can write pretty dry. I write happy time items for PTI. I can make you laugh. I can make you sob. I can write you right out of your freaking job. I come up with a good half-baked idea. I can write just like Greg Garcia. I'm flexible. I'm available. I never go on strike. I can be like Mike. I can write like the Beatles. I can write like the boss. Got the Genesee Quad. Got the special sauce. I can write like Nigel. I can, I will. Just pop on in and you'll be through. I can write like Chaucer. I can write like the Bard. Like Pablo Torre or Levitard. I can write like Wilbon. Oh, no, it's surprise. I can write like a goy or circumcised. I can write just like Louise Gluck. I'm the best. I don't need a chair and I don't need a desk. I can write with swagger, I can write with moxie. I can write like Chuck, I can write like Roxy. So when the writers strike, let me take their spot. I'm your dream employee, I'm an AI bot. I can write like Lupica, sure I can. Don't need benefits or a pension plan. So when the writers strike, bring me in and then you're never gonna want those writers back again. I'm an AI bot. I'm an AI bot. I'm an AI bot. I'm an AI bot.